Call me old man Waves.
Damn you, old man!
You're old.
Damn it, Wade!
And welcome to the Old Man Wade Show. I am your host, the goddess dub and the lord of laughter, the one who's barely awake and probably a little ashy, Old Man Wade. My co-host, the pinnacle of political perfection, Super Wakavi, is probably with his wife right now because he finally has a weekend off, and I think they have it off together, so shout out to him. But I have a very special guest, someone I've been like kind of scared to ask to come on the show, and one day I was up drinking. It was like, hey, you know what? Fuck it. Woke up. I was like, oh shit, she saw that. So why don't you tell everybody who you are?
Okay. Hi, I'm Mary. I am just somebody who likes to scream about comic books on the internet, more or less. I'm a managing editor for oncomicsground.com. We're a comic book website. We do reviews, news. We also have a flagship show of our own. It's called Panel to Panel, where, you know, there are three of us, and we just scream about comic books. So
that's my kind of show, because we pretty much just scream on here about whatever comes on. Me and my co-host argue about whether or not mermaids are real at least once a month. I believe they are. He says there's no science behind it. I go with, well, what about the creatures we haven't seen? And it goes into a whole thing, so... If you're listening to the show and there's a drinking game and mermaids are brought up, take a drink, because that's the thing. And normally I have at least a beer with me, but unfortunately Drizzly was running late. this may not have been on the docket, but how'd you get into comic books?
My father, actually. My dad started reading comic books in the mid-60s when he was a kid. And he just carried it all the way through. And I remember picking up a lot of his comic books from like the late 80s and early 90s when I was a kid. So I was reading Superman at John Byrne's Superman at about 4 or 5 years old. I was probably a little too young for some of the books I was reading, but it's just I started as a kid and it just kind of carried all the way through, and now I'm a hopeless mess.
You know what? I can completely understand that, and it's funny. With everything going on now, like we haven't been able to go anywhere. So like all the money that I may have spent, going out or something like that, has literally gone to Comixology.
Honestly, same. Much to my wife's chagrin.
Yeah, it's funny. So it was different when I was collecting physical copies. In our old apartment, we had an all-weather room. So I was just collecting and collecting and collecting. And my landlord was a jerk, and we had to move last minute. So I ended up throwing away 8 trash bags worth of comic books and giving away...
Oh, no.
Yeah, and then giving away so many more because I was angry, I was stubborn, and we just wasn't going to have the space. So now I'm just recollecting everything digitally, but it has just been... Like, it was bad. And I remember the year we got married, I stopped. I didn't buy any comic books for the first 9 months.
Oh, jeez.
So, because we did it ourselves. Like, we got engaged in February and got married in October. And so for December, my wife went to the comic book shop and bought everything in my pull. And I was just like, you are the best.
Oh, she's a keeper.
Yeah. How she puts out...
Fortunately... I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, fortunately for my wife, both of her parents were comic book collectors, so it's not something she's particularly interested in, but she is used to it. My mother-in-law's X-Men collection is par none. She actually has an X-Men number one.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. I've posted pictures of it on Twitter before. I'll have to see if I can find the tweet and show it to you, link it to you afterwards. But no, she... bought it in installments in, I want to say, like, the 80s, I think she said.
That's not bad. That's actually pretty damn good. Right. Have you ever done the shop-to-shop looking for specific issues, to, like, complete a set thing?
I used to work in a comic book shop, and I rapidly became a collector of, you know, particularly variant covers or piecing together runs. My wife and I have gone all over the state looking to fill in certain runs.
Yeah. So,
no.
I was collecting comics big in the 90s. That turned into, I stopped for a while, high school, basketball, and just didn't have any money. So when I am back. I had to run downstairs to get my order of alcohol. So thankfully, Mary was nice enough to hold for about 5 minutes.
Never gonna fault somebody for grabbing a drink.
So I didn't have any money. Finally got a job, and I started buying them for shits and giggles, and I started loving them. Then I came across Deadpool, and I fell in love. I was like, "Who is this guy?" My buddy was like, "Oh, this is Deadpool. You never heard?" I'm like, "No, I don't know who this guy is." So then I started reading that. Then I accidentally bought Ultimate X-Men, thinking it was a regular X-Men.
Oh, dear.
And had no idea what was going on. I'm like, why is Wolverine... What? This doesn't make any... But this is... Why is... Huh? And then I bought the Exiles, thinking it was... thinking it was in the X-Men's continuity. I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. So I finally got back into it. Got myself an order, and I officially started reading comic books consistently right when Avengers Disassemble started. And fast forward to 2015, I started getting into DC, and fast forward to 2018, I started to get into anything that wasn't Marvel in DC, and now here I am, this full-fledged dork.
It's amazing how quickly the transformation can happen, though.
Oh, yeah. I'm assuming, I think we may have had this conversation, but your favorite character is Batwoman.
Yes.
Do you, because I, like, for me, I remember the moment I started loving Deadpool. It was watching, it was Sabretooth grabbed him by the throat and said, "Scream for me," and then Deadpool just screaming obnoxiously.
So, I think I remember that issue.
And I was like, that's my guy. So at what moment were you like, her, she's the one?
I don't mind telling the story, but I do kind of want to preface you. It is a really heavy story. I don't know how, because it involves a lot about me coming out as a teenager, and, you know, I tried to do stuff. So I don't mind telling the story. I just don't know how comfortable you are having that on the show.
Well, just so you know, like, we talk about, honestly, everything under the sun.
Okay.
I've talked about me being a cutter. I've talked about my failed suicide attempt. And, you know, so if you're comfortable at all talking about it, then.
Yeah, no. I'm perfectly comfortable talking about that. The first time I saw Batwoman was I want to say late 2006. It was during the her introduction in 52, which is a maxi series that he published from 2006 to 2007. If you have never read it, it is probably one of the best books DC has ever written. And it's a 52 issue weekly series, so it is a bit of an endeavor, but I recommend that to quite literally everyone. And when I first saw her first appearance, which was 52 week 11, it's her first appearance as Batwoman, I was in the public library downtown, and my friend and I, we used to go through the single issues, and it was about a week after I had tried to kill myself for being gay. So, obviously it didn't work, and I'm thankful that it didn't work, but that kind of left me in an emotionally broken place, because, you know, you couldn't, the thought that I was having at the time was that, oh, I can't be quote-unquote normal, and I couldn't even, quote, you know, kill myself right. So it's truly a hopeless place, and so I'm going through the comic books, because my best friend at the time, John, he was gay as well, and I told him everything, and so we were downtown, we were just trying to take it easy, and I opened up this book. I had come across gay characters before, the characters like Renee Montoya, and it doesn't really end well a lot for characters when they have their coming out stories. It's usually very tragic. And in Gotham Central, Renee Montoya just loses everything. So I'm sitting here flipping through the pages of this issue, realizing that, you know, not only is this character gay, but she just bust into a room of supervillains and just absolutely laid all of them on their asses. And I'm just looking at it, and I start to cry. Because I'm like, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm like, holy shit, she's gay, I'm gay, and look at all the cool shit she's doing. She just punched some dude in the face and knocked him on his ass. And it was kind of that moment where it clicked that I can be a person too. And after that, I immediately became obsessed. And I have every printed appearance that Batwoman has ever made.
Wow.
I have, oh yeah, I, like, when I say I became obsessed, I became obsessed. I have every single issue of all of her solo runs. If there's an issue of a run that she just appeared on panel, didn't say anything, if she's just on panel, I have it. And I have all statues except one, and the statue that I don't have is just, I don't like the way it's constructed. I even, my wife, for a combination birthday, anniversary, Christmas, any gift-giving holiday, she actually bought and paid for the Sideshow statue, which I don't know if you're familiar with Sideshow statues. They can run anywhere from $500 to $1,000. And the craftsmanship is just incredible. So, like, when I say I am obsessed, I am quite literally obsessed.
But you know what? I love that. Wow, I'm looking at it now, actually. That's incredible.
It is a gorgeous statue.
But see, I dig stuff like that because when people... It's not so much now, but I remember when, like, the early 2000s, late 90s, when people would talk about comic books, you kind of had to, kind of whisper to it about it because it was, you know, it wasn't cool and... And even when I started reading them on the train and stuff like that, like, it was one of my favorite things to do, go buy comic books and just get on a bus and just go and read it. And by the time I get home, I'd be done. But the power of stuff, of story, of certain stories, they kind of speak to you in a certain way because, like, you can relate to a lot of things. And I feel that's the one part about comic books that people don't realize. And, like, if you can feel a certain way about a music, a television show, or just a piece of art in general, I don't think comic books are any different. It was funny for me trying to go back and excuse me and read Luke Cage, and I was like, wow, he's a terrible character. And then all of a sudden, like, Bendis takes a hold of him. I'm like, oh my god, like, why is this dude so great? I don't remember two instances with my wife, because she's not a big comic book person, but like your wife, where she's like, wow, that's great. So one time in particular, we were still dating, and I'm at home and I'm reading Deadpool. And she looks over my shoulder and she goes, is Deadpool dropping a piano on Wolverine? I go, yes. Yes, he is. And so she's laughing. And I said, well, if you want to read something, I got Alias. And she goes, I don't give a fuck about Jennifer Garner. I was like, no. It's Jessica Jones. So she's reading Jessica Jones. And she calls me the next day and goes, do you have book two? I said, yeah, I got them all. And she fell in love with this character, in which, in turn, she ended up hating Kristen Ritter because she thought Kristen Ritter didn't have the body type for Jessica Jones. And I laughed and I said, and welcome to my world. Because I said, if anybody, it's like this, anybody else but Ryan Reynolds was going to play Deadpool, I was going to riot. But then, like, just there are certain stories that kind of speak to me. Like, I understand Jamie Madrox's idea of kind of wanting to be everywhere at once and do everything. And then, like, seeing Deadpool having his issues with, like, his, like, self-image and, like, you know, trying to kill himself. And there's just a lot that goes into these characters. And I always tell people, like, regardless of what you like, there is a comic book out there for you. It doesn't matter if you're just...
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I was like, and I tell people, like, oh, you like zombies? Get The Walking Dead. Don't watch the show. Read the book. You like vampires? There's vampire books. If you like... What did I just finish reading? I just finished reading Paper Girl a few months ago and fell in love. Why the Last Man, Invincible. And I tell people Invincible is, I think, one of the best complete series I've ever read, because it's almost like the character grows as you grow, and it feels like the writer grew as the comic book, because there were certain things he said that he wrote in, like, the first, like, maybe 20 issues, and then realized, oh, I sound like an asshole in these issues, and then corrected himself going forward. So I was like, okay, this is, I kind of dig when someone can, like, improve on something, even improve on themselves, when they're writing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So let's, okay, going back to the docket. There was something I wanted to bring up. You mentioned last night about pre-ordering comic books and how that really helps the creators. And that's not something I knew about.
Like I said, I used to work in a comic book store, and you really kind of got to know the intricacies of the process. And I think that, because I also talked about kind of just being burnt out in general, and I think this has partially contributed to it, but there is a physical comic book distribution is a monopoly. Diamond Comic Distributors is kind of the end-all and be-all of distribution. There are little ones, but Diamond has exclusive contracts with Marvel, Image, Dark Horse, any major publisher you can think of. DC tried to buck it, and it went about as well as it was going to, but they are still distributing through Diamond. However, comics function on a pre-order basis. A comic book shop has to pre-order single issues.
Yeah.
And those are the sales that count. Because I'm sure you've seen sales figures for books like, oh, Batman number 34 shipped 80,000 copies. I'm sure you've seen numbers like that floating around.
Yeah.
That only means that comic book shops pre-ordered 80,000 issues. That is not issues sold.
Oh.
So when you're buying a comic book from the comic book shop, you're just pulling it off the wall. You're literally just reimbursing them for their purchase. So the publishers don't see that money. Diamond certainly, you know, it's not a one-to-one purchase. It's you're just repaying the comic book store.
I never knew that. Like I sort of kind of worked at a comic book shop. When they used to go do events, I would come in and I'd work for credit. So I didn't know the ins and outs and stuff like that. So like knowing that now, that's. It's kind of weird how that works, but now it also makes sense why people are like, get a pull, so at least we know why we're buying this stuff.
Yeah, and with Comixology, Amazon does not release those numbers, so we very truly have no idea how that plays out in the success of a book, because Amazon owns Comixology, and Amazon's like, you know, fuck y'all, I'm not releasing these numbers. It's hard to weigh how much digital sales actually hurt and or help. But if so, that we know for certain, the only way to surefire support a book you love is to pre-order the single issues from a comic book shop. Now, if you don't have an LCS or local comic shop in your area, there are tons of online retailers. Midtown, DCBS, Graham Crackers, I think Unknown Comics does pre-orders, but I mean, you can get them shipped right your door. And I know with Midtown and DCBS, they usually do it at massive discounts. I actually used to work for DCBS, but you can get like 40% off cover.
And I also have a friend who is building up a she's gonna build a shop, a comic book shop and more in Texas, but she's doing orders. It's Gulf Coast Cosmos, GulfCoastCosmos.com, and they do comic books and stuff like that, so you can pre-order them and stuff like that, so go check that out as well. Ooh. So there are ways around just supporting. And I always tell people when, because I've had the debate with people about, well, not the debate, because I understand it. When people talk about, like, you know, supporting Marvel, and I was like, it's tough to support Marvel with all the fuck shit that they do. But then you have someone like Vita Ayala, who I absolutely love. And it's like,
I love them so much.
Yeah. So, which is funny. Vita was helping me with my pronouns, which was not something she had to do. But I was writing an article, and they went, "No, make sure." And I was like, "I don't want to misrepresent you." And they were like, "Oh, use my name, they or them, perfect." So I want to support Vita, so I go and buy her comics. Excuse me, I go and buy their comics, and so it's. It's a gift and a curse because you want to support the creators, but but then it's like you're still kind of lying in the pockets of Marvel, but then like what do you do? Because you also have these creators who have basically been like, fuck you, we're going to do what we do. Like I'm seeing a lot more LGBTQ representation in comics. I'm seeing a lot more black characters in comic books. And it's like, oh my God, thank you. There are characters that look like me. You know what I mean? Like little brother, had to come out to my father 3 or 4 times. And oof. Last year he said, I'm going to come out to him again. I'm like, don't bother. Because if he doesn't get it by now, dude.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll support you if you want to, but he's just not gonna get it. Like, you know what I mean? And I remember him coming to me excited that Cyber, I think that's the X-Men, came out as bisexual, and he was like, "Oh my god, this character's bisexual!" And da da da. He was like so happy, and I was like, "Oh, I can give you a rundown of characters that are like,
oh yeah."
Not Cypher, the dude who speaks. Cyber, the one who he can read people's minds and then develop their powers, I think. Or they're not their powers. They're learn what they know. David something. I can't remember his name. Cyber, X-Men.
Oh yeah, he first pops up in a New Mutants. Yes, run. I think it's New Mutants Back to School.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And he was just like, he's like, yeah, on top of that, he's black. And I was like, yeah, I was like, I can give you a list if you want to. So like, it's like that excitement for him. Cause when he was, growing up, there were no comic book characters like that, but now he has the option of finding out characters. Then I told him, I was like, yo, there's more than Marvel and DC. So if you want to read more, like it's literally just a quick Google search and you'll find all the characters you want to. Going back to the idea of like, if you want to find something, you know, it's there. Okay, and so just so the audience knows, in the state of my ignorance, I was putting this docket together, and I asked Mary what she wanted to talk about, and she said the state of DC comic books. She goes future state DC or future DC, and I was like, oh, so I'm thinking like the future of DC comics. Yesterday, I'm online and I'm just reading some random stuff, and I go, oh, that's what Mary meant. Okay, so can you explain exactly what this is? Because you'll definitely do it better than I can.
Future State is DC's latest initiative that they've got around the corner. I want to say that starts in January.
Yep, yep.
But this is obviously the New 52 and Rebirth were massive initiatives that they did. And with the massive editorial shakeup that has happened at DC, because AT&T went in and basically axed half of Warner Brothers, this is the big shakeup that they've got going on right now, because the people that have been in charge for the last 25 years or so, they're all gone. So it's mostly an entirely new editorial staff. So they're trying to do something new. And truthfully, I think they're just kind of, you know, quote, buying themselves some time to figure out what direction they want to go. Because Dan DiDio was going to do 5G, which was going to be another reset, reboot, relaunch, whatever. So I think they stripped some elements out of that and like, okay, let's try to figure it out. But it tells the story of various possible futures in the DC universe. I think it goes over like 10,000 years or so.
Oh, damn.
Because you start like, you know, everything from 5 years into the future to like 10,000 years in the future. Don't quote me. But there's a Wonder Woman book called Wonder Woman Immortal that actually takes place, quote, at the end of time.
Oh, okay. I'm actually pulling up because I got the free issue on Comixology, and they pointed something out that she had a Green Lantern ring around her neck and Batman's utility belt.
And she also is part of Superman's cape, I believe.
Yes, I think. I'm pulling it up now just to like, so Old Man Wayne, I am super professional. Yes, that's Superman's cape as well.
Because I think she has remnants of at least every bit of every Justice League member, because everybody she knows is dead.
And that's not, you know, sad at all. But it, you know, what's funny is I love when people who are super Marvel or super DC go, I can't believe the other company's taking ideas from, they steal from each other. Let's just...
All the time.
Yeah, so I'm looking at it. Yeah, I can't really see that the picture's too small. But yeah, she does have a Batman's utility belt, Superman's cape, the Green Lantern ring. And then there's this random Superman, Worlds of War, Superman of Metropolis. And he's in his underwear, a cape.
Some people are jokingly calling it BDSM Superman, and I can't stop laughing about that.
The name of this episode might be BDSM Superman.
But no, it is going to be a massive layout of various futures, and it's bringing in a literal shit ton of new characters. And a lot of them are more on the quote-unquote diverse side of the spectrum. That, you know, we're getting a lot of people of color. It looks like we're getting some more LGBTQ superheroes. We're getting, you know, superheroes of different gender identities, because there's actually a non-binary Flash.
Oh, dope.
And it's just, we're going to see this big expanse of possible futures and new characters. I know the big one everybody's really talking about right now is the new Wonder Woman. Her name is Yara Flor, and she's going to be Brazilian.
Okay, and I'm looking at the picture now, and she has a kind of like lasso, but it's got like two balls at the end of it. So it's almost like, I think it's called a bolo or something like that, but it's like a different like rendition of the Lasso of Truth, and it looks super cool.
Honestly, the character seems really cool. See, if I love a character equally as Batwoman, it is Wonder Woman. And so, like, I'm really excited for the different Wonder books that are coming out, because Nubia, who is Diana's twin sister, is also taking over as Wonder Woman at some point. And Nubia has been Wonder Woman intermittently, or, you know, she's been a starring Wonder character intermittently, and then they just kind of forgot she existed for a long time, but I'm not salty.
It was funny, because I remember someone saying that, and my aunt was saying, because she's a huge, well, she's not my aunt, literally, but she's like my play aunt, I love her, and she's a huge Wonder Woman fan, and she goes, no, Nubia's been around for a while.
Oh, yeah. No, Nubia's been around for a long time. Don't quote me, I want to say 1973. I want to say it was early 1973, and probably the only good thing Robert Kanger ever did. Not a writer I'm fond of, but so no, Nubia has been around for a long time, and her popularity legit just depends on who's writing Wonder Woman at the time.
And see, that's another problem that, and again, goes back to my Luke Cage argument about how certain people can't write certain characters, because sometimes you just don't get it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I write a bunch of like comic book articles, but if I have a question about something regarding whether it be a woman of color, someone in the LGBTQ community, I ask. Because the last thing I want to do is misrepresent somebody. So you have a lot of... But then you have, like, these writers who actually really get it. I remember Jason Aaron wrote an Avengers book. And he was writing about She-Hulk and about how angry she was at her cousin, because he just didn't understand how she could, like, feel a certain way when she was a Hulk. And she was like, well, you don't know what it's like when you look like a supermodel bodybuilder and you have these villains trying to cop a feel, or the paparazzi taking pictures of you because your chest fell out. And I was like, you know what? I never would have thought about that. And it's true. Yeah. Like, it is true for any like celebrity or especially women. It's like, oh, well, we're in a fight. Well, I'm going to cop a feel, or, hey, your tits came out, so let's snap a picture of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of cool when someone, like, you know, people get it, because, you know, it's people should be represented properly. And I use that, and I say that word fairly often, because I get it. I'm a black kid. There weren't a lot of like comic book characters I can look up to. Like, you know what I mean? How many like black superheroes was I supposed to dress up as in the 90s? You know what I mean? There weren't any. And like, to your point, like, now you have like not just Wonder Woman, but there's not Wonder Woman, excuse me, Batwoman, but there's more. Like, you know what I mean? You have more options. So, do you feel like this is kind of forced representation? Because you mentioned how it just doesn't seem like they know where they're going at this point. Or is it just like a good attempt at something?
I don't think it's forced representation, because honestly, it has to happen at some point. And the analogy I like to use with DC, and specifically their gay characters, is that it's, you know, quality over quantity, that you get a gay character maybe like once every 65 years. But when you do get that gay character, they're really well written, because, I mean, you know, Renee Montoya and Batwoman, if you've never read Gotham Central, by the way, it's a really good book. And so when you get these characters, they're really well written, but again, you get one every 65 years. So it's nice to kind of see DC kind of getting off their ass a little and bringing more characters into that kind of spotlight. So, I mean, I think at the end of the day, a lot of it's going to depend on how well was it written.
Yes.
There's a lot of talent behind these Future State books, so I've got my fingers crossed. But I think it's honestly been a long time coming, and I am a hardcore DC fan, and they're really bad at this. Like, nobody hates DC more than DC fans.
That's funny.
But it's very true. Nobody gets pissed off with DC faster than DC fans. And it's just, like I said, you know, when they do it really well. But a lot of times, you know, some characters do get underserved. Like, I guess if we want to look at a character that is really cool, but just nobody seems to know what they're doing with, is Cyborg. Like, Cyborg is such a cool character, and nobody ever seems to know what to do with him.
Yeah.
And so whenever he does get, because he had a Rebirth solo book that just tanked, but it was so good, and it's just, And so I'm hoping that with DC's kind of larger commitment to a more diversified lineup, we can see something more.
Everything you said about, like, Cyborg is what I'm loving about the new X-Men run. Is they have found a way to include characters that nobody should care about, but they're writing them in such a way where it's like, oh wow, they actually are kind of cool. And I think it's because they finally made the X-Men a lot more inclusive than they already were, which is saying a lot. So you had say it again, go ahead.
I was gonna say Marvel remembered that the X-Men can make money.
Yeah. They stopped being stubborn and realized, like, well, if we can't make movies about it, then fuck them. And, like, then Hickman just came in and just, like, literally kicked in the door and was like, hey, this is what's going on. So, I've been clear on my disdain for the New Mutants, but also due to my ignorance of them. Yeah, I know.
That is my favorite X team.
I know. And so, I like them all individually. But every time I read Danny Moonstar, I swear to you, they made her one of the most obnoxious characters in other books. Now this new Mutants run that started last year, I'm like, oh my god, have they always been this good together? And every New Mutants fan has yelled at me and going, yes! But, like, I loved them all, like, piece by piece and individually. I didn't like Cannonball on the Avengers, neither or Sunspot. It just didn't seem to, like, make sense to me. But, like, I like them in other comic books. In one of my favorite Sunspot moments was during Second Coming, and he had to, like, take a breath, and he was like, wait, I thought you were invulnerable. He goes, I'm super strong. And he cuts himself up and goes, how many times do I have to explain my power to you? Like, I always love Boom Boom's sense of, like, not caring about anything, but, like, still having, like, this, like, big heart. Cannonball's naivety I loved. Sean McCoy's, like, badassery, and Magic.
He's my favorite.
Oh my god, and then Magic is unapologetically evil. I love it.
She really is.
There was an issue of, a side issue of Empire, and she was back in her, like, demon, form, and she was saying how she was getting ready to conquer the world, and then it it was gone. And I think Doctor Strange, somebody said to her, do you feel better now? And she looked them dead in the face and goes, I regret nothing. I was like, yes!
That's why we love her.
Which made the movie, her representation in the movie, so disappointing because the actor herself was great. Like, I was like, oh, she's playing Magic? I'm all for it. And then they turned her into, like, this...
And then they made her racist, and I'm confused.
Yeah. And it's funny because someone said she was racist, and I was like, was she? So I went back and watched... So the Honest trailer of New Mutants came out, and I watched it, and I went, oh, yeah, she was. Like, and it wasn't even necessary. Like, all the insults, it's like, no. Hey, let's mock the indigenous people. That seems like a great idea to do it. You know what I mean? It was just like, ugh. It was nasty. So I love them individually. And this new run has been phenomenal. Vita Ayala's run is just started their first issue last Wednesday, which has been, they bring back somebody.
Oh, it was such a...
Yeah. was like,
it's such a good start. I actually, Karma is actually my favorite Marvel character ever, and I actually have her little action figure right now. But no, so Karma is my favorite Marvel character. Again, obviously, I like the lesbian character, but I'm really excited because it seems like she's going to get more of a role.
Yes.
Because she's the new mutant that nobody seems to know what to do with because she died so early in the original run. Well, quote unquote, died. And then she comes back in subsequent runs. But the funny thing about Karma is they actually start poking at her sexuality as early as the 1990s.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, because there is an issue of X-Force or something where they actually go to Burning Man. And they run into Karma at Burning Man, and she's got, you know, buzz cut, you know, dyed pink. It is hysterical. And she's there with a couple friends, and they're like, does she know her friends are gay? And it's just funny. And then there's a beast myth. Karma has this problem of showing up in books that aren't about her and then making them about her.
I'll give you a perfect example.
I'm sorry,
Oh, no, go ahead. You're good.
I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, I have a perfect example of that. No, sorry. No, you go ahead. I'll stop. Go ahead.
No. There's a Beast mini from the 90s. It's a 3-issue series, and I think it's the only time the characters had a solo run. The entire story ends up just being about her. Because she pops up looking for her 2 younger siblings, and Beast and Cannonball have to help her. And that's just the whole story. Like, Beast takes a backseat role in his own miniseries. Like, the writer just wanted to write a Karma story.
And it's funny how, like, how a lot of times that works. I remember it was X-Men 501. No, 502. Was it 502? It was Uncanny X-Men. It was right when they got to San Francisco. And they used Karma as bait to get the, the Hellfire Club minions with the mask on, and they use her as bait, and then she turned around and started beating the shit out of all of them, and Cyclops called her back, and she was like, "Aww."
and it's during Zeb Wells's New Mutants run, and if you've actually never read that New Mutants run, it is phenomenal. It's probably one of the best. I can promise you, Danny is not extremely annoying. But he, in the back pages of the deluxe edition, he refers to Karma as the hard ass who doesn't suffer fools. And that's very much part of the reason why I do like her so much. That, and, well, gay. But, and so I'm really excited for a writer like V to kind of take that up. So, like, fingers crossed, because she ends up on the team a lot because she is... she is the original New Mutant. She appeared, she is older than any of the other characters. Because she appeared way before the book, the New Mutants book was even in production.
That makes sense.
And her first appearance, actually, she uses Spider-Man to beat up the Fantastic Four. She's trying to save her younger siblings from her evil uncle. And she's like, well, shit, how am I going to do this? Hold up, I'm going to use Spider-Man. So she takes possession of Spider-Man and busts in, and the Fantastic Four just happens to be there, and they're like, the fuck? So she's mentally possessing Spider-Man and has this big fight with the Fantastic Four, and it is just beautiful, and I love it.
I love when stuff like that happens, when you find a character who no one really knows about, and then they're like, hey, I love her. Like, another character I couldn't stand, Shatterstar. Didn't like him. Shatterstar pops up in X-Factor. I love him. They gave him a personality. Longshot. Didn't like Longshot. Love him in X-Factor. I thought Multiple Man was a terrible character. He ends up being one of my favorite characters after that run. Monet St. Croix is... I love me some Monet St. Croix. Like, her... Monet St. Croix's level of not giving a fuck is it's almost beyond Namor. There was somebody else on that team that I love, and I'm drawing a blank. Richter. So you give all these characters, you take them away from, not even just, like, Marvel, but you take them away from the X-Men in general, and it's like, hey, we're just gonna give the people good characters. Let's just do this. And it was phenomenal. It was like, so all this time, it's like, it's really up to the writer to make these characters more than what they are. I like that they even dealt with some of Strong Guy's issues, like him not knowing how to deal with Richter and Shatterstar being gay, or like when Monet comes out as, and well, not comes out, when Monet mentions that she's Muslim, he's like, So like, and he's not a terrible person. He's just, you know, sometimes he's just a douche. Like he just doesn't get it. But when the chips are down, he's like, I'm gonna protect my friend, even if I don't understand it. So, a lot of it, again, it really depends on the writer. Like I couldn't stand Batman up until New 52. I thought he was I didn't really get it. But also a lot of it has to do with the internet when they start saying like he wins because he's Batman. I'm like, I'm gonna need more than that. Like, I love Wolverine. Like, I love Wolverine. He's one of my favorite characters. Like, he's one of the people, like, who got me into comic books. But I don't go and run around saying he wins because he's Wolverine, because he doesn't just win because he's Wolverine. Like, you know what I mean? And when people go, he's a terrible character, all he does is fight, I'm like, you don't know the character. Like, he's cried and been in tears and been in pain and suffered more than you know. But again, I'm a lot more versed in these characters because, you know, I'm involved in them. So, I think that's all I had for comic books, I want to say. Before we move on to more serious topics, is there anything out right now that you absolutely suggest people should read?
Out right now that I think people should read? Honestly, New Mutants. Vita just took over the book, and I cannot stress enough how excited I am for this, because the previous issues of this run I've not had a problem with, but I have a problem with split narratives, because, you know, alternating issues, excuse me, sorry, I had to clear my throat. But no, I have issues with alternating narratives. It's just it's weird for me to keep track of, so that's the only thing I genuinely didn't like. But it looks like we're picking up with a cohesive, you know, singular narrative, and they're bringing in some extra characters, because Gabby is going to be on the team, and Gabby is Laura Kinney's clone. And if you've never read All New Wolverine, oh my God, she is a hoot, and I'm very excited.
I like Laura Kinney. The run before the All New X-Men, I was kind of like, eh. So it kind of turned me off of her, but I like her character in general. So I gave it another shot, and for what I've been, so I kind of bounced around. But I'm like, oh my God, this is so great. Is an issue, there's a panel with her and Deadpool, and there's like, they're fighting these like zombie animals, and there's a zombie sloth, and they're like, oh my God, God, zombie sloth. And the sloth is going real slow. And there's a vending machine, and Deadpool's like, okay, it's going to take a while. Do you want anything? And she goes, vengeance. And he goes, they got soda. Okay, soda, then vengeance. Like, and I love that she's like the only person who really gets him and understands Deadpool. But I also love that there's a scene in X-Force, and Wolverine and Deacon are playing this ridiculous
Russian roulette.
Yeah, with like a combination of spin the bottle and Russian roulette. And, like, Gabby's in the middle of this, just, like, excited for everything going on. And I loved it.
Oh, gosh. I think one of my favorite Gabby moments is when she cuts off her middle finger and gives it to Deadpool as a gift.
Yes! and he loved it.
Insulting. He's so excited.
Oh,
I would read a book with just the two of them.
Oh, I was going to say it's the exact same thing. I would pay good money to see a Gabby and Deadpool. I don't care if it's a mini-series or a maxi-series, but please, for the love of Odin, give us a Gabby and Deadpool book. And I hope it's a series where, like, where they both acknowledge that they're in a comic book and it's, like, a buddy comedy. Because I would love to see her in, like, see the both of them on the cover of an issue dressed like Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Like, we need shotguns.
Yeah. Honestly, I think a hilarious scene would be Deadpool sitting her down and explaining that she's in a comic book.
And she would be the only person who gets it. Like, I can just picture her going,
so great.
Whoa.
Damn it, Wade.